How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 153 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Tuesday episode today, obviously. And we got Thunder versus Jazz coming up on Tuesday night. I'm going to be talking to David Locke, host of Locked On Jazz and head of the entire Locked On Podcast Network, in just a moment. Thunder coming off a couple wins at the start of the break. So they beat the Lakers 110-93 on Friday night. They beat the Pelicans 118-110. On Sunday night, after that huge fourth quarter from Russell Westbrook, 21 points in the fourth quarter, more than he's ever scored in a fourth quarter before. Quick housekeeping, Enes Kanter seems to be back, healthy. He doesn't seem to be back. He is back. Seems to be healthy. Says the arm is still not quite 100% and has some stuff going on the arm, but went for 20 points on 9 shots against the Pelicans on Sunday and was looking fine and normal throughout the game, though he says he's still in a little bit of pain with the fractured arm after he punched that chair against Dallas about a month ago. Victor Oladipo, his status is still unknown. He went through limited practice on Monday with the team. He's had back spasms since Thursday, kept him out of Friday's and Sunday's games. So he had limited practice on Monday. They're going to give him a try at shoot around on Tuesday morning before they play the Jazz and see how that goes. And depending on that, how that goes, then they'll see what happens in the game. The way the Thunder him to operate, my guess is they're not necessarily going to announce anything after shoot around. And we're probably going to have to wait. Billy Donovan doesn't speak at home shoot around anyway. So my guess is we're going to have to wait until Billy Donovan's pregame availability to find out for sure if Victor Oladipo is going to play on Tuesday night or not. We're going to get to my conversation with David Locke, host of Locked On Jazz and voice of the Utah Jazz and all that in one quick second. But before we do, I just want to take a quick moment to talk about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go when I look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for when Tom Petty is coming to Oklahoma City in April. Everything about SeatGeek is designated to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today. Quick break, then we'll get to that talk with David.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we're welcoming in the, do we call you the Locke Father? Is that what you are? David Locke.
Hey, if that is what you're calling me, it's probably the nicest thing I've been called all day. So.
Well, I last time we podcasted together, it didn't work out too well for your Twitter mentions.
No, I seem to be incapable of doing anything to Thunder fans without getting them upset with me. But that sometimes deserved, sometimes not.
It's okay. There,
I was right last time. I just want to point that out.
I actually agree with you. I had never thought about the point that you made, which is that you should not stand up until your team scores. You should stand up until your team allows a score. I had never thought about that before, but it was a good point because it does always get super awkward if a team, you know, if you're standing up until your team scores, the fans in the arena, and then they don't score for the first 4 minutes of the game. That's always uncomfortable.
Fortunately for Thunder fans, they've rarely had to deal with that.
Yeah, I think Russell Westbrook makes an okay chance of that, but their offense has struggled, and they're going up against a really, really good Utah defense, third in defensive rating right now. At least they are going into Monday night's games. Last time, the Thunder actually won at Utah, played a really sloppy third quarter, but other than that, a really strong defensive performance from them. I thought certainly one of their best wins of the year. How do you think that – is there anything that you could take away from that game to translate into this one, or was that just a really good Thunder performance from you?
No, it was a brilliant performance from Russell Westbrook. The Jazz game plan was really clear. It was to make Russell Westbrook beat them with the mid-range jumper, and that's exactly what he did. And if you look at his season-long numbers compared to what he did on that night, he was unusually good, which probably means the Jazz gave him a little bit too much room. He also was just exceptionally good. But the Jazz kind of played the numbers on that and tried to keep him off the rim, tried to keep him out of transition, and keep him into a mid-range jumper game. They really dropped Rudy Gobert and gave probably too much airspace to Westbrook in that game, and he made him pay. And to his credit, he's so incredible right now that the Jazz kind of tried to pick their poison with him, and he was good enough that he was able to make him pay in a way in which he doesn't always beat people. So that's just really a tribute to Russell Westbrook and how great he was that night.
And that's kind of a common defensive strategy from the Jazz, right? Like, I mean, in terms of you're not sending Rudy Gobert far from the basket for the most part. They drop him back on a lot of pick and rolls. And that's probably the most common way that defenses tend to guard. Maybe they guard the pick and roll in general. Certainly guard the pick and roll against Russell Westbrook. You want to just bait him into those, you know, 16 to 20 footers off the dribble. And if you can do that more often than not, it's probably going to work out. But when he gets hot, like, you know, he did against Utah in that last game at Utah, or even like he did against the Pelicans on Sunday night when he went for 21 in the fourth quarter and was just ridiculous. Like, it's really hard to find a way to stop him in those circumstances.
The only thing that's changing slightly for the Jazz is as Favors gets healthier, and they play a little bit more with Derek and Rudy together, it allows them a little bit more to bring Rudy up a bit more on that pick and roll because now there's a second rim protector behind. And John Wall just could not deal with this the other night. He ended up turning it over 9 times, and I think Gobert and Favors had 8 block shots between the two of them. And so you can play that pick and roll with a little bit more aggressiveness from Rudy right now if Favors is in the game. And so that's a subtle change the Jazz are making as Derek's getting healthier and having more of an impact defensively.
I'm curious to know what the Thunder front court is going to look like here too, because like Billy Donovan, the first 2 games after the trade deadline, after they traded for Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott, he's stuck with the same starting front court. And I would be so surprised. I mean, look, I think the change could be made even as soon as Tuesday night. Like for this game, it wouldn't shock me if Sabonis goes to the bench and Taj Gibson goes to the starting lineup. They got a 3-game road trip coming up. I would be thoroughly surprised if by the end of this 3-game road trip, Gibson were not in the starting lineup by that point. I think it's going to happen pretty soon at this point. And I wonder what their front court rotation is going to look like against Utah, because obviously the size of that front court, and when Favors is healthy and when he's going well, that's one of the strengths of that team, and it's obviously a really good team. And I wonder how many minutes Gibson's going to get. How many you see with Kanter at center when, you know, maybe trying to use his pull to get guys away from the paint, because, you know, obviously he's great. He's great around the rim and he's an amazing post-up player, but you do have to guard him when he ventures out, you know, to 20 feet and beyond and even the 3-point line, even though he's not shooting great percentage. You have to guard him there, and defenders tend to do that. So I wonder how Donovan is going to try to maneuver that lineup and the front court just to see what he can try to make work against Utah's front court.
Well, it has a little bit to do with how many bigs he's going to play, right? So if you're going to play 4 bigs, and Cantor being the third and Sabonis being the fourth. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I can't imagine that Cantor and Sabonis on the floor together is a very good combination. And it's very difficult if both of those guys are coming off the bench to not at least have them out there for a few minutes together every night. So he may be trying to avoid that. I listened to Locked on Thunder the other day when you were taking your mailbag questions and heard you say this. And it was interesting. You went on the Abrines Oladipo issue and the Gibson starting issue, and I actually kind of disagree with you in one point here. I actually think who starts matters a great deal, because the minute you don't start, you're limited at maximum 36 minutes. And that's only if you play 18 consecutive minutes on each half, which nobody does. So really, you're actually limited to almost 28 minutes the minute you don't start. And I think Taj Gibson and Oladipo have got to start at some point, just because they're your best players, and you want your best players on the floor most of the time. And does that make sense to you? Because you're not making a sub till the 6 minute mark of the first or third quarter. And then you're not playing 18 consecutive minutes. So at some point in time there, you've got to come off the floor and probably come off the floor for 3 or 4 minutes. And so now you're down to playing 26, 27 minutes a night for Oladipo and Gibson. I don't think that's what they want.
I think that makes sense. And I don't think necessarily I think Gibson should start. I would be starting Gibson. I think the only reason he's not starting right now is because Billy Donovan is basically putting him, he wants him to be firmer on, defensive terminology and play calls and that kind of stuff. And then once he does, I think I feel pretty confident that he's going to have him out there starting. And I think you don't rent Taj Gibson so you can bring him off the bench so that you can start DeMontis, the rookie DeMontis Sabonis. I don't think that's something that an organization does. And I don't think it's something the Thunder are doing. So I think we're going to see Taj Gibson no matter what.
Yeah. By the way, I'm calling total BS on that from Billy Donovan, and I really like Billy Donovan. But, Taj Gibson's been in the league for 9 years. He can figure it out. And I promise you that Taj Gibson's 9 years would let him figure out all the terminology better than Sabonis probably knows the terminology in half the time.
I agree with you.
And so what he's really doing, he's just trying to say to Sabonis, hey, Sabonis, you've started all year. We're not just going to – we don't want to just – dismiss you and make you feel as though you're not a part of this anymore. And that's really smart. Managing a roster for 82 games is what these coaches do at a level that I think most of us don't get. In fact, I am certain most people, unless they're in those meetings or around them, don't get at all. And it's something that, if you watch Twitter, you listen to fans or even media talking about it, they're all, well, you should have done this. No, so much of what coaches are doing every day is getting guys to still be engaged on April 16th. And that's a little bit of what Billy Donovan's doing, and I respect that immensely.
Right, and I still think Sabonis is going to play. I don't think he's just going to, axe him from the rotation. I think he's just going to get, Joffrey LeVern minutes.
He might not need to, though.
He might not what?
He might not need to.
Might not need to
right?
play.
He's had his experience. He's had a successful year with the amount of minutes he's played this year. He probably will play. I'm not saying he won't, but he might not need to. Depending on what, if you find a small lineup that you can play with, who's your small ball for?
Jeremy Grant.
So I think you might see Jeremy Grant playing those 10 minutes a night at this power forward, and that Sabonis stops playing, and I think that would be fine. You're here every day, and so But I'm just saying, I think at this point of the season, that seems like a really okay thing. Sabonis and Cantor have played 114 minutes together, and they average being -2 per game when they play together. That might be a lineup that you don't really – and my instinct on that is I don't want Sabonis and Cantor on the floor together. So that might be a lineup you try to avoid, and you play a small ball. And, boy, you play small with Cantor at the five, you'll never defend anyone, but, boy, nobody will ever stop you because Cantor – then has free space in the middle of the work as a post player. He'd be pretty good, and if he could pass every now and then, he'd be really good.
Right, and Grant, honestly, ideally, from a stylistic perspective, he works okay next to Cantor. You know, he, on the defensive end, he's not going to stretch the floor or anything like that, but he's athletic and he can deter some shots around the rim, and he's not like this, you know, world-class rim protector or anything like that, but he's athletic enough and long enough and a good enough defender. Like, he's a pretty decent defender just because he's so athletic and he's so long and he's so annoying because of that, that he can be decent enough next to Kanter. It's kind of like what the Thunder thought they were going to have in Kanter and Ibaka, which for some reason, those two guys on the floor together, it never quite worked, even though you'd think it would. One of them's on the inside, one of them's on the outside, and then, you know, Kanter struggles defensively, but Ibaka's the rim protector, so it'll help. But it never quite worked, and it works a little bit better with Grant, even though Grant is obviously, you know, levels below Ibaka in terms of the quality of defense. But in terms of those traits, like, that's okay. And yeah, look, Sabonis doesn't work great, and I don't think he's going to get consistent minutes throughout once Gibson does enter the starting lineup. I don't think he's going to be, you know, 14 minutes a night no matter what. But I think we're going to see times where he's going to play, and we're going to see other times where he's going to sit. I don't think he's completely out, because I think that would be uncharacteristic for Billy Donovan. Like, there's almost no one who's ever completely out of his rotation. He's always kind of dusting guys off and bringing them back in to give him burn.
Right, and that's a little bit of kind of where I was a moment ago, just talking about, you know, working guys through and keeping guys engaged for 82 games. It's really it's the art of what's going on that these coaches do that we've tightened ours now. We've said, okay, now's the time. Like, we're making the next move. We're trying to get better. So we've tightened our rotation down. Trey Lyles is now out of our rotation. Boris Diaw is getting limited minutes. But that's where we are right now as we make that next step, which is to say, hey, here we come. And this is going to be what's going to carry us for the playoff run. And so we've made that switch that eventually you're going to make at some point in time. All right, I just ran an NBA Wowie, by the way, of Enes Kanter and Jeremy Grant without Sabonis, LaVern, Adams, or Gibson. So that would be Kanter at the 5 and Grant at the 4, right?
Okay, let's see it. I actually haven't checked these numbers. So let's
see. So they've done it for 190 minutes this year, which is a pretty small sample size. As we expected, they're averaging 115 points per 100 possessions offensively, which is great. And defensively, they're allowing 112. So very much what we talked about. And that's good. You're plus 3 in those circumstances. You take that. It's a pure offensive game at that point, where probably Kanter has a tough time being guarded. He's shooting 55% in those circumstances. And you just got to make sure you have enough shooters outside. Actually, Andre Roberson has got an effective field goal percentage of 58% when those two are on the floor without a big. Russell Westbrook has an effective field goal percentage of 55%. Anthony Morrow actually was pretty good with those guys, who does not exist anymore. So that's an interesting, worth keeping on. We'll see. I don't know your team as well, and I don't know how much the organization puts pressure to make sure that Sabonis gets his 14 minutes a night, but I feel like he's had his exposure this year. And so if he was taken out of the rotation with 22 games left in the season, I wouldn't think anything of it.
I like your qualification of Anthony Morrow does not exist anymore.
I'm not sure he actually ever existed as people defined him while he was here.
Anthony Morrow was a mirage.
Yes.
That's all he was his whole time. Is Gordon Hayward going to dunk on anybody on Tuesday?
He's just incredible right now. I mean,
he's
dunking
on everyone.
He had put Thon Maker, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and John Wall on posters. But it's more that, like, what's really interesting to me is, I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo is really good. John Wall's really good. John Wall's probably the second best player in the Eastern Conference, maybe Kyle Lowry. Gordon Hayward's the best player on the floor both last two nights. I mean, not even like sort of either. Like, absolutely the best player on the floor in both of the last two games. He just has a little something to him right now, and he just is in complete control of the game and getting to his spots where he wants to. He's just terrific. And it'll be interesting to see what, you know, Andre Roberson is supposed to be such a great defensive player. He is. But sometimes, you know, great defensive players don't always, you know, if the offensive player is that good, then it doesn't always really matter.
Yeah, Hayward is, man, he is so good. He's, okay, you've obviously seen him play more than I have. He's better now than he's ever been, right?
Oh, yeah. He's on a different level than he's ever been. I've watched every game he's ever played in his career. And been there, you know, been there for every single one of them, called every single one of them. He's at a completely different level, and it's because of the work. I mean, it's a great story. It's just, you know, here's a guy who, it's a great story. I think it's one of the great stories in the NBA. He averaged 22 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists last year. Okay, that's pretty good, right? I don't think most people realize how good he was last year. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. And you know what his answer was when he went in and met with the training staff? This is not good enough. We need to everything we're doing and restart because this is not good enough. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, and he's been – his ability to finish around the rim has improved so much since his early years in the league. Like, that's – he was always a good shooter. But his ability to get to the rim and then finish around there is so much more impressive than it was with, like, second-year Gordon Hayward. Or even when he was, like, a six-man and in six-man contention. It was really one of the best six-men in the league and should have been. That last year he was coming off the bench, like, really should have been in contention for six-man of the year. I forget where he finished in the voting. But he was really, really good. Shot over 40% from three that year and was really good. But, like, his ability to create his own shot from anywhere on the floor now is as good as pretty much any other wing in the league at this point.
I think he was much better around the basket than people realized. I mean, I just think, but to your point exactly. He's now actually, like, if you go look at what guys shoot from like 0 to 3 feet, I think he's crossed over 70%. And the guys who do that in this league are LeBron James and Kevin Durant.
Yeah, and like prime Blake Griffin was over 70% with that stuff.
Yeah, I mean Tyson Chandler, DeAndre Jordan, Rudy Gobert.
But that's lower. Like that's lower usage. That's lower usage. But,
players driving to the basket, finishing around the rim. He's in a unique thing that I would say on him. The thing that's most different is his handle is better, and his strength is better. So he's able. I in my play-by-play call often call bumper cars. He can go play bumper cars with you and still finish on his way to the basket, and that's where I've noticed him being most different.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Like his ability to just kind of bounce and recover off contact is really big. Last time the Thunder played in Utah also, Rodney Hood wasn't there. I feel like I keep thinking that Rodney Hood is going to make – and he's definitely a good player, don't get me wrong. He's a good player for certain. I keep thinking Rodney Hood is going to kind of make the leap though, and he hasn't quite made it. Do you think this is kind of what Rodney Hood is?
He should be a little better than he's been this season. He's off a little this year. So I would say I expect him to be a little bit better player than he's been this year. I am not particularly optimistic that he has the leap in him that everyone talks about. Only because he doesn't go to the free throw line enough. It's a very hard way to live in this league, being a wing player that never goes to the free throw line.
Yeah, I mean, Thunder fans should be fully aware of this because that's Victor Oladipo syndrome.
Okay, I would guess that neither of them are particularly efficient. I mean, Victor Oladipo, I keep a stat pack, which I don't know if you've used on Locked On Thunder, but it's and I was supposed to do something for you, I never got to it. But he's used to be one of the worst pack players in the league.
Yeah, well, his efficiency is – so he's 54% true shooting this year, which is basically league average. I forget exactly what league average is, but it's usually 53, 54%, somewhere in there. I forget what it is this year off the top of my head. But he's 54%, and it's in part because he just, like, he never gets to – he's averaging 2.3 free throw attempts a game. Like, he really almost never gets to the free throw line, and his free throw rate is down now pretty comfortably, like very easily, the worst free throw rate of his entire career. His free throw rate, which is just free throw attempts per field goal attempt, like it's a simple stat. His free throw rate is half of what it was his rookie year in Orlando. So he's changed his style. He's changed, he doesn't put the ball on the ground as much. He's really a glorified spot-up shooter when he plays with the starting lineup because Russell Westbrook handles the ball the whole time. And they just kind of put him in the corner, and that's about it. But he does not get to the free throw line anymore. And the fact that that's diminishing, I think, is a little bit discouraging, to be honest.
What does he do well?
What does he do well? Like as a plus?
Yeah.
He's a good on-ball defender. I think he's a good on-ball defender. And, like, he's – I think –
Can I give you a bias on this? Can I give you a thought on this?
Can I guess what you're going to say?
Well, I have a theory in the NBA about players, and this is why I asked the question a little bit. I think Victor Oladipo might fall into it a little bit. Because statistically, I don't think there's any sign that he's a good defender, right? I don't think he's a good real plus minus defender, or his defensive rating, I know, has never been good. But I sometimes think that if there's a wing player who can't shoot, now Oladipo, to his credit, has become an above a pretty decent shooter, but who can't shoot, we just announce that they're good defensive players because there must be a reason why they play. Now, Robertson actually is a good defensive player, but he would be a classic example of this, where like you have a guy who's out there and he can't shoot, and he plays, and so you have to figure, well, he must be a good defensive player, because we can't equate really what defensive is in any metric, so we just assume it. The other one I always think is that these top 10 draft picks just get a pass forever. Like, oh, well, like, you know, they're good at something. Like, well, maybe not, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think Oladipo's, I'm being harsher on him, more just systematically talking about how we evaluate players in the league, more than I am talking about Victor Oladipo specifically. But I mean, the guy averages, what, a steal and a half, so he's probably got to be somewhat of a good defensive player. And he's a pretty good athlete. But I just think it's an interesting, I don't know. I'd like to know what he.
Yeah, he fights hard on the ball. He's been really good at corner threes this year. He's been really, really good. I think he's been hurt the last couple of games with back spasms, and they haven't said what his status is for tomorrow. But as of a couple of days ago, he was still leading the NBA in percentage from the right corner. So he's been really good. He's shooting like 43% overall on corner threes, and he's like 49% from the right corner or something like that, something really, really high up. So he's been really good on corner threes this year. He has not been good above the break threes at all. Anything in the wings, he's been bad at.
Well, the Jazz allow the fewest corner threes of anyone in the league. By the way, so he uses possessions below league average.
Oladipo?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's he at, like 19?
Well, he uses about – I'm just pulled up my numbers. He uses 15 scoring opportunities in the league, and he scores 0.4 points less than the average offensive player in the league does in those possessions.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because he doesn't get to the free throw line.
Right. He goes to the free throw line 6.2% of his possessions used.
Yeah.
Would you like me to put that in perspective for you for a second?
I would love that.
All right, let's go small forward shooting guards. And let's do a little search here. Excuse me, people that are going to be bored while it's always good to do searches while live on the air. Free throw percentage, smallest to largest. All right, let's go to players that go to the free throw line at the same rate as Victor Oladipo. What did we say he was? 6. What?
6.2.
6.2, Kuzmiskas in New York.
Yeah.
Stanley Johnson, Mike Dunleavy, Jamal Murray, James Young. These all go more than he does. Alan Anderson, Evan Turner, Omri Caspi, who is the definition of a spot up shooter. Here's a frightening one. Jared Dudley goes to the line on more possessions than Victor Oladipo. Justin Holiday, Doug McDermott's there also, by the way, at 6.8.
You know what? Pretty much Dion all Waiters, these people have in common.
Dion Waiters, 6.9. Kyle Singler, for reference points, 6.9. Yeah, these Thabo Sefolosa, who Oklahoma City fans know as a pure spot up shooter, only uses more possessions going to the free throw line than Victor Oladipo.
Right. Well, this just further, but I think Oladipo's never been good at going to the line. But this is also a product. I mean, it's not just him. It's a product of the way they're using him too.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
No, I mean how extreme. I mean, look, what do all of those people have in common that you just said? They're all spot up shooters, right?
Right, but Victor Oladipo should be, if he was athletic enough and good enough handle, he wouldn't have to be a spot up shooter. He could make plays out of it. By the way, just to let you know, Rodney Hood, 6.0, less than Victor Oladipo.
I think it's hard with the way that they use him for him to look. It's both. I'm not arguing it's one or the other. It's this perfect storm of events that have put him in this situation to where he doesn't get to the free throw line. He's never been good. It's not like he was getting to the free throw line a ton in Orlando. He was just doing it more than he is now, but he was still going there at a firmly below league average rate. Like his free throw rate was still like in the low 20s. Like it wasn't anything great or anything like that when he came over from Orlando, but just the role that they've put him in this kind of, you know, stand in the corner and let Russell Westbrook operate, it puts him in a position to where this guy who already was not very good at getting to the free throw line is now all of a sudden in, you know, all of his possessions are just in they're not optimizing his ability to get there at all. And so I think it's just kind of both of those two things meshing together and putting him in a position where he's never really getting there.
All right, I've got to go in a minute here, but this is kind of just to bore everyone to death. Here are the players in the NBA who play over 20 minutes a night that shoot the fewest amount of – use the fewest amount of possessions to go to the free throw line that are wing players. Okay? J.R. Smith, Danny Green.
Is this a ratio or a total number?
Percentage of possessions they use going to the free throw line. So J.R. Smith uses 2% of his possessions to go to the free throw line this year. Hasn't played a lot. Danny Green – Buddy Hield, welcome Sacramento. Kyle Korver, Wayne Ellington, Etuan Moore, Tony Snell, Josh Richardson, Terrence Ross, this is 20 minutes or more, Courtney Lee, Seth Curry, I'll get to our guys in a second, Joe Johnson of the Jazz, Lance Stevenson has hardly played, Trevor Ariza, Mo Harkless, Joe Ingles, Luol Deng, CJ Miles. Where's Rodney Hood? Ben McLemore, Matt Barnes, Eric Gordon, Otto Porter, Rodney Hood, Klay Thompson, and Rodney Magruder, Nick Young, Victor Oladipo. There you go.
It's all spot up shooters.
Yeah, but
that's a good way to put into perspective spot up shooters become.
But this is what's really an interesting point on this is Oladipo came in the league. People thought he could do everything. That's why I asked you what he's good at, because when he came in the league, the word on him was that he probably wasn't going to be a shooter. He's going to be a playmaking, driving, creating, defending, and now offensively he's a spot-up shooter. It's a great point on your part. His effective field goal percentage is a career high, so give him credit for that.
Right. But the true shooting, which is effective field goal but includes for free throws, is – I guess it is a career high.
I was just trying to be positive because Thunder fans hate me.
Yeah. No, it is. The true shooting is a career high, but it's still like hovering around league average. It's interesting with the way they – it's a chicken or egg type of thing too, right? Like if they were giving him more, he would certainly get to the free throw line more just because the role would be different, but how much better would it be? And are they using him – is his free throw rate down because of the role they're using him, or are they putting him in that role because it wouldn't be good no matter what?
Right.
And it's kind of a chicken or egg thing. I think both those points are defensible. And in reality, it comes down to the answer that it usually is in these sorts of situations, that it's probably a little bit of both.
Interesting. All right. Thunder finish where in the West?
6. I think they're better than Memphis after the trade.
Interesting. You don't think they get to 5?
No, because Chris Paul's back. So I think the Clippers are going
to. We're 5.
Oh, you think
Clippers Clippers get us because they got Chris Paul back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I think Utah is better than the Thunder. What do you think?
We'll find out. I mean, Utah's got to win this game. Like, this is a game. If Utah wins this game, then there's no way the Jazz can fall to 7, right? Like, I mean, not no way, but the numbers swing the Jazz favor. That was a great win by Oklahoma City and Utah. I think that's, you know. But I think, if I've got it off the top of my head correctly, the Thunder are 3 back in the loss column to the Jazz, or are they 2 back in the loss column to the Jazz? They are 22-25, 3. So if the Jazz win and the Thunder go to 6 back in the loss column, hard to come back, or excuse me, 4 back in the loss column, hard to come back from that much in 22 games.
Right. I just like Utah's defense too much. I mean, Utah is what, third in offense or third in defense and 12th in offense, and the Thunder are eighth in defense and 20th in offense or something like that. They still have a negative net rating, and I think after the trade they're a better than negative net rating team. But I think those numbers tend to bear out over the larger sample size, and I don't necessarily see the Thunder catching Utah. But I do see them catching Memphis. I think they're a better team than Memphis is right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Though, you know what? On Memphis, Conley, Randolph, and Gasol have played like 900 games together in their life or something absurd. And you just can't underplay that. Like last night.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
They did this to us too. They just get it. Like last night, they just got it. They just knew, you know, we can't really go lose to Denver. And if you look last night, Conley had 31, Gasol had like 26, Randolph had 20, and not another guy on their team like did anything. But their guys got it. Like they just – they don't lose these games that they're supposed to win because they've just been together long enough. They did the same thing to us. They had lost on a bad loss to Portland against us, and then they came into our building in a match, and the three of them just kicked our ass. And it was like, oh, they just get it. If I don't remember correctly who it was, but they had like two tough games on the backside. And it was as though those guys just looked at the schedule and said, oh, well, if we lose tonight, we're going to end up losing four in a row. And so they didn't. And they still have that. You know, the Jazz and Oklahoma City have the same problem, which is they've never won a game they've had to win as this roster.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that's a big one. Yeah, so Memphis had lost, when they saw us, they'd lost four of six and had us, and then they had back-to-back, or they had two more road games on a trip, and, you know, they just weren't going to lose their five out of seven games. And last night, they went into Denver, they'd lost their opener in Indiana after the All-Star break, they'd suddenly lost three of four, they just weren't going to lose last night. I mean, they just weren't. Like, they're too damn good, those three guys.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. I mean, the having the type of guys like that for a playoff race, it always helps to have old guys who can still play.
Yep. To your point, they're 11-11, I think, in their last, or 11-9 in their last 20. So they're not rolling.
No, and I don't think they will be. Like, I think they're probably the team they are at this point. They're probably the record they are. And if the Thunder plays 600 ball the rest of the way, and Memphis plays 580, the Thunder can take it. And I think, but Memphis is good. It absolutely wouldn't shock me if the Thunder ended up at seven. They're half a game back in Memphis right now, but they're tied in the loss column. So it's really anybody's at this point.
Right. Very true.
All right. You got anything else?
No, I like the trade you guys made, so I agree with you on that. I think it'll be interesting to see if the Jazz defend Russell a little differently tonight. And Hayward's, I think, below 50% shooting against Robertson this year, so it'll be interesting to see if the Jazz can free him a little bit. It's a good matchup.
Yeah, I love watching Robertson guard the best wing scorers in the league. That's always like, I love watching great one-on-one defense. I mean, team defense is fun, but I love watching just like a great one-on-one defender go up against a great one-on-one offensive player. So Robertson versus Harden, or Robertson versus Melo, or Robertson versus, you know, Hayward in this case. Like, those matchups are always super fun for me.
Well, I'll see you at the ball game. Look forward to it.
See you there.